Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with our Milford Township neighbor, Pat Schlerbaum, and engineer Mike Murphy. And because KHOI is the heart of our Iowa community, Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana, is with us and will join us throughout the hour. And later in the hour, we'll share her heart-to-heart and tune-in Tuesday messages. Well, Pat, you know, this weather, it's the change of season. The weather's a little iffy now and then, and it sure does push the little bird migrants onward in these systems.
Yes, it is. We saw northern harriers coming through Milford Township, northeast of Ames, yesterday, a couple of them. Now, they're the birds that you'll see them kind of flying low over the sky with big white on their rump, and they are a hawk that hunts by listening, so they're only going to be 12, 15 feet in the air.
Yeah.
And you get to see them, and there's not a lot of nesting here, so the migrants are coming through.
Sure, and they hang here through most of the winter season off and on.
Oh, yeah.
Checking the grasslands. Yeah, I know those are the little hawks. As kids, we'd call them marsh hawks.
Marsh hawks, and they like your prairie. Yeah. I'm sure one of them was over your prairie.
Well, you know, we're talking about migrants. I had a chance to sit down for our monthly visit with Stephanie and Todd Burris of Wild Birds Unlimited and learn a little more about our feathered friends and other critters.
I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds.
It's Feathered Friend Tuesday, where we visit with Stephanie and Todd Burris about birds and other little creatures of the wild.
Okay.
It's migration season, and we're starting to feed the migrants as they come through, and some of those birds that are going to set up for the wintertime, right?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people have been noticing the juncos. They are back.
Dark-eyed juncos.
Dark-eyed juncos are also, a lot of folks refer to them as snowbirds.
Mm-hmm.
They are obvious when they fly because they have their bodies are dark, and then when they fly, it looks like a kind of a scissors or a V,
mm-hmm.
a white V.
So their outer tail feathers flick.
They're in the sparrow family. They're ground feeders. People look forward to seeing them just because it's a different bird that shows up here in the winter. We don't have a lot of birds that come here to spend the winter other than our normal backyard birds, and so people look forward to seeing them. They talk a lot. If you're able to tune out any noise, they chip back and forth a lot.
Sweet little noises. If you really look at the ones in your backyard and kind of study them, they're all different. it's kind of amazing. You know, you can look in a book and right. think, okay, I'm looking for that. But they could be lighter, darker, have more slate color, more white, more black. It's fun to see.
Our friend Pat Schlerbaum, in his phenology, reports that there's more females that are seen in the information he's gotten was because the males tend to not leave their territory. They want to stay close to where they are going to hang out in the spring.
Mm-hmm. You know?
So they're a bird that nests in the arboreal forest, shift and migrate south. We have a place in northern Minnesota, and we see them there in the winter too, which probably would make sense that some of those, maybe a lot of those birds are males, and they're ones that just aren't going so far, so that when spring comes around, they can hurry back to where they nested the previous season.
A bird that you can see with them, especially up in the northern states, would be the snow buntings. We mm-hmm. see some of those come down, mm-hmm. but it's a lot harder to find them. They're often mixed with horned larks, the roadsides out on the
Lapland larkspurs.
Yep.
Yes.
One thing, if you want to attract them to your yard, is since they are ground feeders, they really love millet, so white proso millet. And you can put it in a feeder or a tray, or you can just sprinkle it like on a patio or mm-hmm. anywhere in your yard, and they'll find it.
I've got a little area that I keep fairly flat and the snow cleaned off.
So I have a question for you.
Yes.
Since you live in the country, are you seeing native sparrows showing up?
I still have some chipping sparrows, but mm-hmm. I'm starting to see tree sparrows mm-hmm. are coming down. They're a northern bird. And I've got white-throated sparrows.
Yep.
Not only have I been seeing them, but they're calling a little bit.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's the males that are toning their call down mm-hmm. or if it's the young males that are practicing and don't quite get their song right.
That sounds like a study for Pat.
There you go. Or one of Dr. Dinsmore's students.
Right. No white crowns.
I haven't seen any white crowns. Harris's, I've seen a couple, and they will hang around this winter. White crowns I see late winter, spring,
yeah.
for my area, at yeah. least. We've been talking about the birds that come down from the north and grace our yards. Now, there are some birds that they may not be the same birds that we have as residents in the summer, but we still get them, and those are birds like blue jays. Maybe they come down from the north, but then they hang out here. But those guys are little hoarders in my mind. Blue jays belong to a family of birds that have some real intelligence. Mm. Crows, ravens, and jays. What can you tell us about blue jays, Stephanie?
Blue jays, their favorite thing is peanuts in the shell. So they also collect acorns and bury them. They prefer peanuts because it's a higher protein and fat source. They prefer peanuts in the shell because then they can cache them and they'll keep longer. C-A-C-H-E.
Yes.
Not C-A-S-H.
If you watch them closely as they're picking out their peanuts, you might see them shaking the peanut. They can tell how heavy the nut is in there. So they might chuck that and find a better one if they find a heavier one.
You know, I've noticed I have a tendency, especially in the winter, I'll just throw a handful out on the deck and the jays come in. Some of them are they're picky.
Oh, yeah.
They go through, it's kind of like squeezing the fruit at the fruit stand or something.
So interestingly enough, yesterday I was at a friend's house sitting on his back deck late in the afternoon, and he's got feeders up, and he said, I have a question for you. He said, I was sitting out here a little bit earlier today, and I watched a blue jay fly in, and it started going through peanuts, and he said it picked up one and dropped it over the deck out of the ground, picked up two, dropped it over, dropped seven of them off of the deck before it finally took a peanut and flew off. And so his question is what's it doing? I said, well, it could be weighing that peanut mm-hmm. because nuthatches do that thing with seeds
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
Or in his case, they have a lot of blue jays, and as soon as those peanuts hit the ground, there were blue jays in the trees that flew down and picked up those off the ground, too. So we were trying to surmise whether or not they were.
If they were working together?
Together, right.
Okay, so blue jays aren't the only birds that cache, right? Are there other birds that we see in the wintertime?
Or yes. Some birds that actually are residents that do the same thing?
White-breasted nuthatches and red-breasted nuthatches.
Okay.
They primarily cache sunflower seeds. White-breasted nuthatches may cache them just for the night, so they have a ready meal in the morning. They typically take a single sunflower seed and fly to a nearby tree and wedge it into the bark. Now, we've seen nuthatches caching seeds, individual seeds, in our fascia of our overhang of our roof. And I've heard people say they find them in their windowsill and thought they had mice. But no, they find a little pocket and they just neatly
jam it in there.
Chickadees also are birds that do a lot of caching of seeds.
There's these little mixed flocks, especially in the wintertime, that are made up of nuthatches and chickadees and downy woodpeckers. Do you have any idea why that happens?
More eyes to keep an eye on predators or potential predators.
Yeah, I suppose.
To find food sources.
Sure. Somebody finds something, they go, oh boy, here's some. Inadvertently alerting all the other birds in the group, huh?
Yes, and that is known as a foraging guild. A group of chickadees, woodpeckers, nuthatches that kind of forage together in groups, and they're able to warn others if there's danger nearby.
I learned a new word there. Are there any other things that share with our listeners about these? Well, we've talked about half a dozen species or so of birds. What are we on the lookout for?
I think one that we get, in addition to the red-breasted nuthatch and the junco this time of year that people look for, sometimes we see common red poles and purple finches, which are a lot of times people confuse house finches with purple finches, but purple finches are a different bird, and they typically show up more in winter than they do in any other time, and they look like they've maybe been dunked in upside down in raspberry jam. Much more color, less streaking of the breast, and so those will show up at feeders sometimes this once we get closer into winter, and they like black oil sunflower seeds just like that.
Of the foods that we can offer birds, what is probably the ideal food to get the biggest group of species?
The best thing you can do is put out black oil sunflower. Striped sunflower is also good.
It just has less oil content than black oil, though, so black oil is the highest.
The highest concentration?
Yeah.
And then I would say peanuts.
Okay.
Lots of those species, woodpeckers, nuthatches, chickadees, and, of course, blue jays.
And even cardinals will eat shelled peanuts, particularly in the winter.
Now, is this a good time to start hanging out suet feeders or mixed suets? Do we start that now, or should we wait a little bit yet?
Definitely get your suet out. The day's shortening and the cooler temperatures, the birds need a lot more food to keep their energy level up.
Get your feeder stations up, ready, prepared.
And make sure that if they've been sitting out there for quite a while, that the food is relatively fresh. Birds know if it's rancid or the nut meats are shrunk and the nutrition is mostly gone, they don't bother with it. Also, you can get mold and mildew in there. So freshen up the feeders, keep them clean.
Wintertime. Water changes from a liquid to a solid. Is it recommended to have water for birds in the wintertime?
Definitely. They really rely on bird baths, the ones that live in town here. They need that fresh water. Get your heaters ready. Put a heater into a bird bath existing. Or you can buy the bird baths that have the heater built in, and that keeps the water open.
Uniformly?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
They obviously will drink the water, but they get most of their moisture, I think, from other sources. But from a bathing standpoint and keeping their feathers clean and pristine for the winter to keep them warm, that's probably the primary reason they need access to water. One other thing I was thinking about, just as it's this time of the year when people are out and it's still nice, is if you're doing yard work and that kind of thing and don't mind having imperfect looking yard, or at least in some people's mind, creating some sort of a small brush pile this time of the year is a really good way to provide a little bit of habitat and cover for birds as the nights start getting shorter and cooler. And especially those sparrows and, the juncos, even chickadees and things will pile into those brush piles throughout the winter. Protection from predators and also extra layer of warmth.
So you guys have a program coming up here in about a week.
'Tis the season for bats, Mike. And so on Sunday the 31st at 11 a.m. here at the store, we're going to have a program on native bats to Iowa that we're going to offer here in the store.
So. Okay, so here in the store is Wild Birds Unlimited, located at
213 Duff Avenue.
Okay.
The presenter is Matthew Card. He is a senior at Iowa State, and he's done some extensive research projects on bats.
What's the last message that we leave our listeners with?
Never leave home without your binoculars. 'Cause I like birds.
run, got to run.
That was Buffy St. Marie's You've Got to Run, Spear of the Wind. And if you're just tuning in, it's about 20 and a half minutes after the hour. I am Mike Metz, along with Pat Schlurbaum and Mike Murphy. We had just listened to an interview with Stephanie and Todd Burris of Wild Birds Unlimited, addressing some of the migrants that we're starting to see show up at our feeding stations. And, Pat, you know, I want to express my appreciation for Ursula Rudenberg. Yesterday, some of our KHOI listeners heard that local talk yesterday was going to be our last local talk, and for a while at least. And Sam Wormley and I approached Ursula about 3 years ago with an idea for a science segment, a science program segment. We were wondering if there was maybe a 5-minute or a 10-minute spot here or there, maybe once a week or even once a month. And she kind of looked at us and said, how about half an hour? And Sam and I weren't sure we'd be able to fill a half an hour. Well, it was because of her insights and knowledge that, half an hour is great for what we're doing. I really appreciate the fact that she was willing to take us on. You can hear that, you know, it's actually twice a week now. And the one thing that she also helped me with is I subbed a few times here at the local talk desk and got worked into the team, and I'm really appreciative of that. At least I am. I don't know if you guys are.
Look what you've created here for Tune In Tuesday, including Anna Banana's exciting voice.
It's a team, you know, the local talk that Ursula often, one thing I'm really enjoy was her Wild One segment. And
oh, my gosh, there was a good one yesterday when she talked about being accosted by a raccoon on the Skunk River. Yeah. And, you know, I've got a little story about raccoons that have denned in the corn crib where I live. Probably as long before I ever arrived there, the raccoons have kind of used that as their den. And they'll come up and they enjoy my black oil sunflower seeds.
Oh, sure.
Now, Stephanie pointed out that there's a lot of nutrition in those. And yeah, even for raccoons. And they get kind of possessive of that. And it's right by the kitchen door when I come out in the morning. And of course, you know, in the middle of June, there was all this little pack of young raccoons, you know, probably their first experience with black oil sunflower seeds. And they're just cute as they can be. But I couldn't help but notice the varying behavior in a few. Some of them would just kind of stare at you and then kind of gracefully try to get back into the shadows. But there was one particularly that was kind of gruff, and he'd growl at me, you know, as I would go, okay, time to move along now. You know, you've had enough. And I'll be putting these sunflower seeds a little better care in the future now that you're onto them. And because you'll have to go find someplace else. But this little guy was kind of he'd growl at me, and he was like, so I think that protecting what is theirs even occurs at a young stage. And I think it sounded like Ursula had an encounter with a raccoon that undoubtedly had something going on with that log, whether he had food stashed there or something. But he was saying, I'm going to bluff you out. And it sounded like she had to kind of deal with that. But varying behavior does occur. And well, for the most part, they're kind of shy and elusive, but they can also be kind of stand their own ground, if you will.
It's kind of like you approach other young animals or even little kids, human children. Some of them kind of look at you, like you say, and others are going to test you.
Oh, yeah.
But Ursula's time with the wild ones, it was just another example of all that she brings to local talk, and very much appreciated.
Yeah, yes. I know Anna might have a little something to say, too. She, Anna, you're a member of this team. Have you got anything you'd like to reminisce about?
Well, I just remember Ursula, you know, I came into KHOI just thinking that we would rent their or borrow your podcast equipment. And Ursula said, I had to laugh at your story, Mike Metz, because I said, you know, so we'd like to use your podcast equipment and learn how to podcast. She's like, how would you like to do a radio program? And I was like, okay. And so and so that started the whole relationship with KHOI. And I always say that I didn't know anyone really well in Ames, Iowa, but because of Ursula and KHOI, I feel like this is my home. And so I just thank Ursula for all her advice and guidance and friendship.
Well said, yes. Hopefully the word hiatus is more in our vocabulary than anything else. So we definitely appreciate the chance that we've been given, and hopefully we'll carry the banner on for a local talk in KHOI and Tune In Tuesday. And right now it kind of looks like we're going to take just a quick music break here. Making our way across the floor here, the sidewalk, and we're going to introduce Susan Guiasta from the city of Ames, and Tracy Peterson is with us today. Susan, what do you have for our listeners before we visit with Tracy about some ribbon cutting coming up?
Well, just a couple of things. Good to see you, Mike. We had our Climate Action Plan town hall meeting last night. It went really well. We had a lot of participants and really got the process kicked off. If you missed that meeting and you wanted to see what was going on, you could always watch the replay on our City of Ames archive. That's on our website, cityofames.org/Ames Channel 12. There's an entire archive of meetings and events that you can watch if you weren't able to attend in person.
I was just going to say, that sounds like a great thing. Some of us had other meetings that night, too, so it's hard to be in two places at once, at least for mortals.
Yeah, exactly. Some other things, like you referred to, we do have a couple of ribbon cuttings coming up for Parks and Recreation that we're keeping an eye on the weather. One of those is this Thursday with Franklin Park. We had a mini city expo planned, and we're just not sure with the amount of rain if we're going to able to put those trucks on the soft ground. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be watching the skies and gauging how much rain we get in the next few days to determine what's the next steps for Franklin Park. So stay tuned on that one.
Yeah, okay.
We still have the fishing pier, the Ada Hayden Fishing Pier, on November 3rd, so that's still on board. And this Saturday is still the first no-charge yard waste day. So keep those all on your calendar. And, of course, the big event is Friday.
Yes.
And
go ahead.
Tracy Warner, who's our city municipal engineer, mentioned to me that in her 18 years at the City of Ames, she believes that she has been working on this project at some point or another most of those years, which I think is a pretty amazing career. It's sort of a height of your career to open a road that is just this popular and wanted so much by the community. So
Gosh.
I'm excited to bring Tracy on board to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, 18 years, that's almost like if you had a child and they were leaving the nest when they graduated. This project has got to be your baby, huh, Tracy?
Right. Yeah, actually, this Sunday will be my 18-year anniversary with the City of Ames.
Well, congratulations.
And so, just in time for Halloween. Thank you.
I was going to say, are you going to pass out some treats or provide tricks for your colleagues Monday?
Right. So I remember my first day of work, employees used to dress up in costumes. And so I will say my second day, I did not recognize a lot of my coworkers because they were having to remind me which costume they had on the day before. So it was a lot of fun.
Well, what can you tell us about the Grand Avenue opening here?
Yes. So on Friday at 2 p.m., we are doing a ribbon cutting. And so what people can do is come down to the South 5th, South Grand area, and we'll have people park actually on the new extension so they can come from the south or the north and join us. The mayor and I are going to speak, and we will have a ribbon cutting, and then we will open the road. So this roadway has been planned for at least 3 decades. I know that work was starting even before I started working on it. And the South 5th Street portion that we opened last year is part of that roadway connection. But we have this great connectivity for pedestrians, bicyclists, and vehicles now in the community that we'll open on Friday.
And puts a link between the north central portion and the southern part of the city right now. That's a great byway, that's for sure.
It does. So it really came about because we needed some congestion relief and to improve air quality and safety in the Lincoln Way and South Duff corridor. As you've seen, it's continued to get congested. And what was recognized was that some people are taking South Duff to try to get to Highway 30 or Airport Road or the south part of Ames. Mm-hmm. And so this provides that north-south connection, as you were saying, down to South 16th, and then they'll be able to connect right over to Highway 30, but separate from the destination traffic that's on South Duff.
Sure. So it provides another alternative for folks if they just want to get from point A to B, from north to south, as opposed to doing some shopping or getting a bite to eat along the Duff corridor.
Hey, Tracy, this is Pat Schlarbaum. I was thinking yesterday, you know, the Grand Avenue connection of Highway 69, you know, one of the major north-south thoroughfares. Coming through Ames decades ago, they had the jog from South Duff over to Grand. And at that time, there was a railroad right away that went down through that, this new extension part. In fact, earlier career, back 35 years ago, I took a train down through that area. So I can only imagine when the trains left and the light went on, oh, maybe there's time for a connector.
That was the Kelly Spur.
But it's been used as a bike path now. But now it's almost like its true mission or its true potential is being realized in 2021. And so I can only imagine how many decades this whole concept of logistics or moving the traffic, what a benefit this is going to be.
So are there
a good point. That connection for bicyclists from downtown down to ISU Research Park and even beyond down to the Tedesco Learning Corridor and out to then there's connections down even to the High Trestle Trail. So you really do have more regional connection by making these shared use paths available, and there is one along both the west side of Grand and the connection with the Vet Med Trail. And then it's grade separated at South 5th. So you go under the bridge. And so it keeps that safety for the pedestrians and bicyclists as they want to commute or just have a nice ride over Iowa Creek.
And I know some of the folks out there just get out there during their lunch hours and take a little break from their activities at work and get their minds cleared for their next 4 or 5 hour week, hope, day. Some of us 4 or 5 hours back then, that was a short day. But that's great. What are there some other projects that are on the being wrapped up this time of year? I know weather's getting to be more of an issue.
Right. So, we also, as part of the grant, we did the new wetland on South 5th Street over by the Boys and Girls Club.
Oh, sure.
And since we got some rain on Sunday, there's some water in it now, and water in Iowa Creek. And then there's another water quality basin there down in the southwest portion. As you drive the new grand, you'll see that off to the west. And so we are bidding the flood mitigation project right now. And so that's the one 2,000 feet each side of the South Duff Bridge. And so that'll be winter construction. And then we have, as you've seen, some roadway construction. We have East 20th under construction. Unfortunately, you know, the pavement was out and it got rained on, so we'll have to see. That'll likely be delayed here just a little bit, but that is concrete going in, and so we can weather protect for concrete. And then we have portions of 8th Street that kind of happened as well. We experienced this each fall, and so not anything new, but we have to take measures, make sure that everything can still get compacted with the subgrade, and the subdrains can get put in and drain things through that, and then get the new roadway in. So we'll make sure that there is a roadway for the winter. So I don't want residents to be concerned about that, but we are continuing that work. 9th Street, we're getting awfully close to finishing that up and opening that back up. So, and then 13th Street, we are going to be shifting over to the next phase here. People probably saw them paving last week on the south portion next to McFarland. So they're finishing up driveways, and then we'll be shifting over to the north side, the other portion that needs to get done.
Yeah, I noticed.
If you've driven that, it's a little bit of a rough ride on that existing pavement.
it's a little rough, but I noticed one of the local neighborhood squirrels was trying to put their little footprint in and scrawl their name in the south lane. So I know some of the workers were watching that, but it's really going to be neat when that corridor is open. That's for sure. Traffic's going to flow much better.
Yes. Yes, it's been a rough ride for quite a few years, and I commend our maintenance crews for keeping together and patching the roads as we've, got so much money and we budget for road construction. But, you know, even within the 5-year plan, we know that there's a lot of roads not included in there that are somewhat rough. And I would encourage people to call me and have that conversation if you have questions about a roadway, call me and see where it is in the capital improvements plan, and then I can sure have some conversation.
Now, is that the best way to contact you if folks do have a concern, or can they go use email, go to the website? Is there a place for that as well?
Yeah, so they can always email me. Tracy.Peterson@cityofames.org and inquire about, we deal with transportation, water mains, sanitary sewers, drainage. So, there's a lot of information that we have in our office. So, feel free to contact our office in Public Works.
It sounds great. Anything else, Tracy, before we close, or Susan?
No, I think maybe Anna had a question for me.
Well, we were talking about Ursula in the beginning and about how K to Y makes connections. So the person that does my hair is named Morgan, who lives in Nevada. So I heard the interview on K to Y. I'm like, I need to get my hair cut. I'm looking scraggly. So I went to Morgan's salon in Nevada. She did an amazing job where I'm like, ooh, gosh, all my grays are covered, looking fabulous. And then I'm sitting in a chair, and I look over at these amazing dried flower arrangements. I'm like, who did those? What are these? And I bought like four of them because I had a bunch of gifts to give. And I'm like, who is this artistic spirit that puts these together that are absolutely gorgeous? And she said, Morgan told me, Tracy Peterson. I'm like, Tracy Peterson from Local Talk, who talks about like city energy? I mean, what a Renaissance woman. My goodness gracious. And so I was there about 2 months ago. I needed to get last minute gifts for my nieces to celebrate the first day of school. And so I said, I want all of these. And so my nieces were super happy. And why? Because of Ursula, K2I, and Local Talk. So bringing the community together. I don't look scraggly. I have great gifts. And I get to say, I know this fabulous artist. And oh, what do you want to say, Mike Metz? You need to get your hair cut?
Oh, just this one here. No, I actually, I do my own. That's a story in itself. Sometime maybe I'll share with you guys. But little known that Tracy actually eyes prairie areas and things just for some of those plants, you know. So I think when a new road is being proposed or an improvement, she'll go out ahead of time and pick all the pretty flowers and things that she can use later for her arrangements.
Tracy, how do you do those arrangements? How long does it take to make those?
Well, so I really go off of creativity and where I go to local shops and antique shops and find the different containers. And then I have some greens like what Mike was talking about, and I'll work with various forms. So it actually started when I got married over September 5th last year, so a little over a year ago, and I was looking for flowers for my wedding. And, you know, amongst COVID and everything else and wanting a natural wedding, I came across these Sola wood flowers that look very real, but they, you can dye them any color you want. So that brings even more fun into it. And so those are the flowers that are in there. And then I use a lot of the other aspects for kind of that filler to create each one. Each one is very unique, and it's just is a creative side that I have very technical work at the office, and then I can do this hobby at home with creativity and colors.
And you can share them. This is Pat again, Tracy. And after the Earth Day appreciation, I noticed a nice setting that I think you presented to KHOI, and it's going to be going up the street to the new location. So they're just wonderful.
Oh, great.
Yeah, you have really quite a talent there. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Tracy.
No, thank you.
Yeah, that's you heard it here, folks. You know, we can always reveal new talent here in our community. So, Tracy, we hope to get a cut sometime from the new businesses that you're going to open up.
nice.
Seriously, though, we thank you for joining us. Thank you, Susan, for your information and always tuning in with us. We always appreciate that. Hope the weather cooperates for our ribbon cuttings. And just want to let those little folks know for the Halloween night here coming up that please be safe, and motorists, please be on the lookout.
Oh, that's a good question for Susan. So is there trick-or-treating this year?
That is a great point. I can't believe I left that one out. Yes, Halloween, Beggar's Night, 5:30 to 7:30 on Sunday, October 31st. There's Halloween safety tips on our website, but, yep, we need to look out for one another.
Definitely. Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Tracy. And we'll talk with you again soon.
Thank you.
Daylight come and me want go home. Work all night and I drink a rum.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come Mr.
And Tallywoman is here. Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana. What have you got for us today?
Well, it is Tune In Tuesday and Local Talk as I try and tempt you to listen to KHOI. So, Mike Metz, you ready for me? Why do skeletons have low self-esteem?
I don't know. I was just going to say they are picky about bones.
Well, close. They have no body to love. But we have somebody to love, whether it's on Local Talk, the team there, or a guest. And who else do we love? Well, we love, after a short time off, we love that Donna and Lana are back in the kitchen. Woohoo! Mm-hmm. So today, the dynamic duo will explore thoughts of Halloween with some scary items in the news regarding food and the economy. Some advice from Ralph Nader, which I have his cookbook, by the way, which they should do the show on that cookbook itself. All right, I digress. Wait, so what are they talking about? Some advice about Ralph Nader about solar clothes drying. And we will do some minor tweaking to some standard seasonal fare. Cornmeal, pumpkin, and caramelized apples. Yummy. And a bit of Iowa food history, the Eskimo pie ice cream sandwich. Now, I've never knew there was a connection to the Eskimo pie ice cream sandwich in Iowa, so I will be sure to tune in to the Donna Lana Kitchen Show. Now, just because it's Halloween, Mike Metz, I'm going to give you another one. What do ghosts eat for supper?
Donut holes.
No, spaghetti. So they won't be talking about spaghetti on the Donna Lana Kitchen, but what is this Donna Lana Kitchen show anyway?
Do they eat it with a spork?
They eat it with a spork. Good one. Well, so what is this Donna Lana Kitchen show where they eat with a spork or spaghetti? It's the Donna Lana Kitchen show. It talks about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinions. Chef Donna and Farmer Lana explore the local food scene with lively discussion and what? Good humor on Tuesdays at noon and repeated at 7 p.m. Now, in honor of the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, talking about standard seasonal fare, the pumpkin. So here is a question for you again, Mike Metz. It's very serious. Get ready. Put your serious science face on. Here we go. What do you get when you divide the circumference of a jack-o'-lantern by its diameter?
You get a lot of pumpkin pie, R squared.
Ooh. So smart. That's right, pumpkin pie. Now, also, why didn't the zombie go to school?
Because they didn't have brain salad sandwiches?
Ooh, I like that one. Nope, he felt rotten. And if we don't want to feel rotten, we should listen to Sam Wormley and you today at 4:30 p.m. for Science Bites. Will we learn how to calculate the circumference of a jack-o'-lantern? Will we learn all about pie? Will we learn about going back to school to learn about science? What will we learn, Mike Metz?
Well, it's a little bit of a continuation, part two, from last week. We more or less conclude what we were talking about COVID, but then we talk more about reducing our CO2 footprint. And I like that solar clothes drying technique. We did that a lot. I don't get to do it because I live on a dusty gravel road right next to where I used to like to hang the laundry out, because the wind is solar powered. And one little neat tip in the wintertime, if you hang your clothes out and they freeze and you bring them back in, you introduce a little humidity. They kind of freeze dry, but what humidity is left helps your house.
Interesting. And so what about like the crinkly component of having your clothes all icy and crunchy?
Well, they're easier to carry in.
Yeah,
like cordwood.
Yes, exactly. Well, so we should listen to Science Bites at 4:30 p.m. today, but you have a repodcast of the show, right?
Yes, that's Wednesday at 8:30.
8:30 in the morning or night?
Good question. In the evenings, yes.
Yes, I'm using the scientific method of inquiry where I want to know.
Well, and I can hear that by your voice. I should have been
exactly.
Serious.
Yes, that's right. I put on my science bite voice to say, It's time to get serious, guys. Now,
Sirius could be seen this morning when you, if you were pre-dawn, Sirius was a very prominent feature in the sky, in the southern sky, right below Orion's knee.
Mm-hmm. All right, there you go. Listen to that Smarty Pants Mike Metz. So after listening to Smarty Pants Mike Metz and Sam Wormley on Science Bites, you can later tune in at 8:30 p.m. to listen to the Heart to Heart Messages show. Tonight, we are going to explore the power of storytelling and how our stories can open our hearts that leads to a place of connection, compassion, and understanding. So Jackie Haley has a passion for writing, for making a difference, and for helping others with similar passions. She is a published author, speaker, and entrepreneur. Her first novel, Crystal Beach, received many powerful endorsements following its release